Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy new year. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Happy new year, Nikias. I'm going to pull the curtain back to start the year, Nikias.
Okay.
So we're recording this podcast. And I had forgotten that the USC football team was playing today.
Yes.
My bad. I went to go text Nikias. I'd be like, hey, you sure you want to go ahead and do this now? USC still playing? I'll try and be considerate and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. As I was going to send said text, he had already sent the link for us to record. So I started to click on the link. USC is up 45-30 at this point. I think Nikias felt like they had it in the bag. I'm not sure what happened there. Anyways, as I'm working to kind of get myself organized, click on the link. I take a little bit because I'm a little older. Sorry for the bit. They go two plays down the field, score a touchdown. They have a kickoff. Old boy drops it. They start at the 1 yard line. Then Tulane gets a safety. Nikias knew none of this.
Yeah. Yeah, so imagine my surprise.
I said, I broke the news to Nikias. Hey, bud, are you sure you want to do this? This is your fault. Tulane wins. They won. They beat USC.
USC. Oh, God. Ugh.
Sorry, I got something in my throat. Allergies, you know.
Texas. Yeah.
How are you feeling? How is your new year? Why is New Orleans just destroying your life football-wise? Rewind back, because it wasn't just Tulane beating USC. I believe the Saints beat the Eagles as well. Mm-hmm. You watched Andy Dalton and Taysom Hill complete 20 of 24 passes on you, bud. Hashtag real QB play.
Real QB play. That's nasty work. That's some of the nastiest work you've done on this podcast.
What's nasty is what your football teams have done over the last few days, sir. How do you feel?
You see, there's only one football, and that is the one in which Marcus Rashford scored the game-winning goal coming off the bench for United after not playing in the first half due to oversleeping and missing a team meeting, apparently. Sleep is hashtag important. But
A, what an incredible Eurostep. B, I had to start this way. I'm sorry, I had to start this way. I had a like, nice, beautiful thing here. Happy New Year, Nikias. So excited to be here. I'm grateful for every day, honestly. Life is a blessing. Appreciate them every day. You know, important to stay present. Forever's a beautiful concept. Put the work in. Love yourself. Celebrate your wins. But I'm throwing all that away to make fun of your football teams.
You're starting off the year with hating. That's a curious choice, but you know, one must walk their own path. I respect it.
New year, new me.
Wow. Okay. Before moving on to basketball, I will just say, for anyone that said the Philadelphia Football Eagles would be okay without Jalen Hurts, and that Jalen Hurts was simply a system quarterback, and because Gardner Minshew threw for 300 some odd yards against the Cowboys, despite throwing 12 hospital balls in that same game, nearly got Devontae Smith hurt, nearly got Dallas Goedert hurt. No running threat in the RPO game. All this, you know, he got yards against a defense that was missing half their secondary. Surely that means the Eagles won't miss Jalen Hurts. Shut up, all of you. And I hope that Saints game is proof enough that you're all buffoons. We will start with negative energy on the pod today. As for USC, the defense has been bad all year. It just kind of is what it is. Like, it's an unfortunate end to that game. I had the game on, but then I wasn't paying attention to it. Then I had the game off because I was trying to finish up pod prep. And so when Steve told me, hey, mayhem is happening, I was like, oh, no, let me turn on the remote and see what happens. I turned the television on. The USC gets them to 4th and 10. It's a completion. And then it's a deep ball. Then two players apparently got impaled. I guess I don't. That was kind of scary to watch. It is a touch. It's yeah. There's USC's defense in a nutshell this year. Still a good year. Caleb Williams, Heisman, cool. That is enough football talk.
Oh, I've been laughing for 20 minutes. I'm sorry, folks. I didn't mean to bring the energy down.
No, it's fine. We're here. We're here.
What do you got, guys?
A headache is what I have. No, you know, I'm gonna you've started us off. Who's caught your eye as of late? What's happening? Let's talk some hoop.
I wanted to give a hat tip to the Grizzlies.
Okay.
And mainly Jaren Jackson Jr. His return helps make them look different. And now what I would say is they did take some lumps. They had some big losses. The optics of those losses probably weren't the best, as you were in the middle of saying, I'm not worried about anyone in the West. And the West is like, bet.
Here's one way to go about it. So
Denver, Golden State, Phoenix said, what's up? But they did bounce back 3 games that they've won in a row. But I've just liked the feel that they're having, the build they're having. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is a key piece of that. The blocks speak for themselves. I think he's has 3 or more blocks in 12 of his 20 games that he's played this year.
Say that again.
What, he has 3 or more blocks in 12 of the 20 games that he's played this year?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, he's been incredible there. But beyond that, he just helps that defense make more sense. And you can see it on the court. You can see the activity from Memphis starting to perk up a little bit. You see more of a freedom for them to rotate and close out multiple times, give those multiple efforts because they trust, okay, we're going to be good on the back line. I'm watching them play Sacramento, and Steven Adams is stunting and recovering and closing out to the perimeter. I'm like, wait a minute. This looks different. You're seeing more as teams are trying to turn the corner and pick and roll, dribble handoffs. You're seeing those stunts from the weak side to recover. There's just more activity from them. And for me, when they're able to show those bodies, when they're able to protect the paint that way, when they have those multiple efforts and you can still, you know, make, you have the freedom to make mistakes because he can clean some things up, I think that helps their defense big time. And for me, their ceiling is tied to that defense. I think we both have questions about the half-court offense. I don't think those have been answered quite to the degree we would want or would like to be able to put that stamp on them. But if they're going to be able to play defense at this level, that can help them not have to do as much of that. And that's the key for them as far as their ceiling goes. So I like what I've seen there. And the other part with Jaren Jackson Jr. is you can now kind of move him around defensively. Against New Orleans, he's out there guarding Herb Jones. No disrespect, but hey, we're going to keep him on the weak side. We're going to have him help. He can also switch. He can guard your bigs. Like, you can just do different things, which I think is important for Memphis, especially if you have Desmond Mane and Dylan Brooks out there defending, and now there's less pressure on Ja to not do his job. I mean, Kings game, Ja rotated on the weak side, almost took a charge. But that's where I'm like, oh, something is flipping here in Memphis. They're getting after it on that end. So that's a positive. So I want to just give a salute to the Grizzlies. I mean, that West is insane. West is insane.
It's nasty work. You touched on the half-court offense, and I was going to ask you if you were feeling any better about it during this win streak. The one thing I would quickly note is that you can kind of get away with subpar efficiency in the half-court if you are just going to rebound like 95% of your misses, which is what feels like is happening with Steven Adams on the court right now. During this 3-game win streak, Steven Adams is averaging 20.3 rebounds, 8.7 on the offensive glass. That's not normal. Like, he's long been one of the better box out guys, a guy that can just clear space underneath. It's fun watching him actually grab these boards and keep possessions alive. So that's one way to kind of counterbalance things.
It's fun watching Steven Adams be a Steven Adams again and do the little things, do the dirty work, be aggressive. When you go back to that Minnesota series, there were questions like, hey, why, do we need him out there? Is he part of the, and now it's like, oh yeah, he does this screen, rebound, defend consistently. And that's been fun to watch. He's been a key piece. And then again, for me, I speak about it all the time, their depth, like they just keep finding pieces. Whether it's Roddy, whether it's Chandler, whether it's Conchar, go out there, do your thing. We'll make it work.
Quick Jaren question for you. This is kind of what you led off with. On the defense front, you mentioned him being able to be moved around the chessboard a bit. That speaks to his versatility, particularly him being on like Herb Jones or any non-shooters he can roam. Do you feel like that's the gambit that can help keep Jaren out of foul trouble?
It depends. It could help because then he won't be as involved in the actions per se. The tricky part is, again, if it's going to be so based on the timing rotation wise, then it becomes, you need to nail that. Because if you're picking up fouls those ways, then it's kind of a double-edged sword. But I don't think we've seen that hurt him. And it's kind of the same thing that I've had with Brooke. Like, Brooke Lopez has really not been hugely in foul trouble this year. How much of that math changes if he does have one of those nights where he picks up a quick two? So is this a way that Jaren Jackson can kind of float a little bit? Yes, but at the same time, he's still going to be involved, and they need him to be involved. So it's more so, can he just avoid getting those whistles?
I was just curious about that aspect, because it's when Jaren came back, and this is something that we noted when he did come back, like, not only is he blocking all these shots and he's all over the place, like, he's doing so without racking up the fouls. And then soon after, he had the stretch where it was a lot of foul trouble. Like, I think even in the Milwaukee game that they just blew him out the doors, it was a foul trouble game for him. It's like, well, if Jaren reverts back to this, then that naturally hurts what Memphis wants to do. So I just wonder how much of this is going to be Jaren just has to be better, and how much can be controlled scheme-wise or matchup-wise, to where you can kind of stash him here and like, okay, he's only providing this specific type of help, and that kind of limits, I guess, the potential for him to end up in foul trouble if he isn't directly involved in actions. He can just kind of plug in where he sees fit.
I think the tougher part is, I think it's just, it leans for me to, he just has to be better. He just can't pick up some of the sillier ones just because of how important he is. And to me, it kind of reminds me of like a point guard who may have some high turnovers per se, but you kind of just need them to play. So yeah, I would like for you to not turn the ball over that much, but I'm not trying to limit what you do. So go out there, play your game. Let's try and cut these ones down, but you know, I'm not going to turn you to a whole different player because you're throwing the ball over the place.
Okay, I got you. And Jaren offensively still continued to impress me with some of the drives, some of the shot creation flashes from him. Actually, one question I did have on the Memphis offense front, how have you felt about Desmond Main's usage since he's been back? It hasn't felt as heavy as it was before he went down, but it doesn't feel like it's been a real like easing in process with him either. Have you been okay with how Memphis is using him offensively so far?
Yeah, I got no problems there.
Okay.
I think the thing is, they have the flow, you know what you can get out of him, and you can use him in different ways. So it's never a scenario where he's not going to be involved. You know what I mean? Like, to me, he's not the type of guy where I have to run this for him to get him going. He'll get himself going. And if not, it'll be in transition. So I'm not as concerned.
Gotcha. Did you have any other teams that you wanted to mention, or did you have any other notes on Memphis?
Nope.
Ah, a softer note this time. I, for one, new year, new Steve and D. Wow. Can't believe what I'm hearing right now. Okay. Well, in that case, I guess I will take the baton. Just a quick hat tip to the Golden State Warriors, winners of four straight. They were able to beat Memphis on Christmas, and we got some not quite fireworks, like a lighter flicker, I guess, post-game. The Warriors were pretty excited about getting that win over the Grizzlies after talking some trash, got a win over Charlotte, even though that was probably closer than it needed to be, beat Utah, beat Portland. This is a team that's rebounding a little bit better as of late. Basically a top 10 defensive rebound rate during this win streak right now. Mostly impressed with the role players here with Golden State. Jordan Poole's probably graduated from this class, but having to soak up a lot more usage offensively for Golden State since Steph Curry's been down, averaging over 30 points per game during the streak. I will start, I guess, with the question, because the turnovers have been sky high with him, and some of them are just silly. Any concern with how he's being used, or any concern about his processing offensively? Or is this just the nature of, okay, he's just seeing more defensive attention and that just kind of comes with it?
Comes with it.
Okay.
I would much rather have him playing at this level with the kind of freedom than out there trying to compute or overthink. If you can get him right during the stretch, that's more valuable than anything else.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, it's appreciating the aggression. Like, naturally, he's going to soak up more usage with that being there to be taken. And so I've been impressed with really the intention for him to drive. And you're seeing how he's able to carve out space, seeing him get to the free throw line a lot more, nearly 9 free throw attempts a game during this winning streak for Golden State. But just kind of keeping an eye on some of the playmaking. Oh, go ahead.
How have you felt about the Poole Draymond two-man game during this stretch? Not even antic related question, just honestly.
No, like it's felt mostly fine to me. Like you definitely see it less so with like the traditional pick and rolls and more so like here's the action. The ball finds Draymond. It's an immediate pitch to Jordan Poole. Like it's very Steph-esque in that way. And so seeing Jordan Poole kind of get a bit of a head start, kind of running into those pitches or running into those handoffs, like I think that's an easier way to kind of simplify things for him and get him downhill, or if a guy's ducking under, he gets right into the pull-up, which to that point, he hasn't shot particularly well from deep during this stretch. And so I would imagine that perks up. One, if he's just off ball more and he gets easier shots, but also like he's too good of a shooter to shoot like 29% from three or whatever it is during this win streak. So I'm not worried. But functionally, I have liked the way that the chemistry's kind of come together. How have you felt about it?
No, it's good. And I'm glad you mentioned kind of the pitch plays where you can kind of see they start doing something. Defense helps off Draymond. He's looking for Jordan Poole immediately. And they're kind of building the chemistry that way, which I think is important. Like, it's good to have that in the back pocket as well and get Jordan Poole those kind of reps with, you know, kind of the play out of the play type scenarios as mm-hmm. opposed to not just go get it.
Yeah. They need to find that flow. And as you said a little bit earlier, if Jordan Poole can get himself right, because it's been such an uneven season for him, if he's able to really find his confidence, like I think naturally the turnovers cut down when he's in more of that six-man role, or if he's just getting easier opportunities off the ball, the shooting will also bounce back if he's off the ball a little bit more. If you have a confident Jordan Poole, now you just have Steph when he's back. You have Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, who 28 points per game during the winning streak. He's just been lighting it up in December, period. And so nice to see him have it going. Andrew Wiggins is going to be back at some point and get back into the flow of things. Like, I think that just sets Golden State up for, like we've been talking about throughout the season, if they're healthy when it matters, they're going to be incredibly difficult to beat. And a big part of that is going to be getting Jordan Poole back into the flow of things. But no, Poole's been playing well. Klay Thompson's been playing well. But to the role guys, though, Dante DiVincenzo, kind of showcasing what Golden State had in mind when they picked him up, a guy that can run around in transition, a guy that can come off screens and make plays get downhill for you, shooting well from three, nearly 41% for three on roughly seven attempts during the win streak. Ty Jerome providing some valuable points off the bench right now. Jonathan Kuminga in the rotation, out of the rotation, back in the rotation, playing well right now, defending multiple positions. Off-ball value out the charts for me. Love the way that he's used as a cutter, the way he's able to cut in open space. I'm intrigued. I tweeted about this a little bit earlier. Intrigued by the occasional post-up with Jonathan Kuminga. Teams will stash some of their guards on him sometimes, and he's just not letting it happen. He is one of the stronger wings in the league already, and so he's able to kind of bully smaller guys. I think back to the Christmas matchup. There was a possession, I want to say, in the first half where Ja Morant was defending Jonathan Kuminga. They go to like a split action. Kuminga's one of the screeners. They don't switch it. He realizes that Ja Morant is still on him, and he just seals and literally backs Ja Morant out of bounds and gets the entry pass that gets an easy dunk. And it's like, well, if you can be an opportunistic scorer like that within the flow of things, that's going to be cool. And with Golden State, like they'll pitch the ball into Kevon Looney or they'll pitch it into Draymond Green to get into their split action. They'll toss it to Jonathan Kuminga. He just faces up. It's like, all right, I can just drive baseline. I can just bully this dude, or I can just use my first step and get downhill. The best version of Jonathan Kuminga, I feel like, especially if they're going to put the ball in his hands, when he's decisive like that, it just simplifies so much. He gets into so much trouble when he's thinking about what he needs to do. You see that on the perimeter as the jumper is still a little bit shaky. You'll see kind of a catch and hold. The defense gets the reset, or he's pounding it into the dirt. And then whatever advantage was there isn't there anymore. And then he's trying to force something. It just feels like the decision making is getting a little bit quicker, getting a little bit smoother for him. You add the defensive value, you add what he adds in transition, you add the occasional offensive rebounding. It feels like he's really starting to get it. And so I've really been impressed with what Kuminga's been able to put together as well. Home heavy stretch for Golden State. They still need to figure out what the heck they're doing on the road. But I guess this is my version of the quick hat tip to Golden State for what they've been able to do so far. The other team I wanted to bring up were the Indiana Pacers, also on a win streak. 1-3 straight, got the Christmas Eve win over the mostly healthy Clippers, which was a fun game to watch. I'm just endlessly intrigued with how they play. It just feels like, I guess, out of necessity at this point, who needs a wing? Who needs a forward? Here are all these guards. We're going to play them together. going to surround Miles Turner with all these guards, and we're just going to go. It's a lot of high tempo play. It's a lot of guard screening. I don't have enough time to talk about how impressed I've been with Tyrese Halliburton this season. 25-9 throughout this winning streak, 50% from three on over 7 attempts during this stretch. But just what he's been able to do inside the arc with floaters, with pull-ups, he's scoring efficiently from just about everywhere. And then again, you have Andrew Nembhard setting screens for him. You have Buddy Hill setting ghost screens for him, and they're able to get that going. And then if all else fails, you go with a spread pick and roll attack with Miles Turner, who playing the five full time for the first time, not playing alongside a traditional big in the starting lineup anymore, has more space to roll, has more opportunity to roll. And you're starting to see that he does have some use as a roller, not elite in that aspect, but still very good at it. Nice seeing him being used as a roller as well as a popper, as a spacer. They'll toss it to him if he seals. It's just been a lot of usage for Miles Turner, so I've been impressed with what he's been able to do as well. And I just want to take a moment to shout out Buddy Hield. First, let's shout out, I guess, Tyrese Halliburton's father for telling Buddy Hield, hey, stop dribbling, just shoot. And Buddy Hield immediately responding with one of the quickest three-point makes in NBA history, right off of a jump ball against Cleveland. But beyond that, he's been shooting flames for the last month and a half. Just during this win streak, 24 points per game, 64% from three on over 8 attempts. In December, 16 games played for Buddy Hield. 13 of those games, he shot 40% or better from three on more than 5 attempts. So only 3 games in which he did not do that. And in one of those games, he was 2 of 3 from three. So like he would have been there if he took more shots. I posted a stat today, 13 games of 40% or better shooting from 3 on 5 attempts in December. That ties his personal high, and that's one off the NBA record for most games in a month like that. And Lonzo Ball holds that record, which blew my mind. But then I remember the ridiculous February that he had in his last season in New Orleans. But Buddy Hield's one of the best shooters on earth. We should probably just talk about that more. He is insane. The off-ball usage for him, watching the Clippers game in particular, in which they inexplicably kept losing him on the perimeter, just within the flow of the offense, in transition, he's filling a lane, he's open. Off of offensive rebounds, he's getting wide open catch-and-shoot opportunities. I'm just like, this is probably the one guy you need to be worried about here. Indiana has other shooters, but like, don't leave Buddy Hield open. I don't understand how that kept happening. But anyway, the real intrigue for me is the defense. It's not very good. That's just byproduct of the personnel. But the way that they are flying around has kind of caught my eye. In the Clippers game, and just zooming out over this recent stretch, a lot of double teams for them. And seeing them kind of parse through that, you dump it into a guy, it's normally the guy that's one pass away, or if the entry passer cuts through, that guy will come double whoever has the ball on the post. And then it's just getting to your right spots. But what you're running into is the small personnel having to sink down into the paint. And so even if they're there on time and on target, it's still just a dump off and a layup. So I don't know how you really counteract that. I do appreciate the fact that they're trying and they're buzzing and they're flying around the ball. And when it's working, it's like the first half in the Clippers game, to where they're forcing turnovers. They're just bleeding clock. And for a team like the Clippers, who have had issues kind of getting into their offense with any sort of real tempo, it's a great gambit to kind of speed them up and kind of bend games into their will. And so, I appreciate the vision of what Indiana is going with right now, doing the best with what they have. I do think long term, there's going to have to be some personnel shifts. They're going to have to balance the roster, get some more size on the perimeter. But this is a team that flies around on both ends of the floor, and I'm having a lot of fun watching them.
Well, I was going to ask, do you feel like Indiana should lean into more of these smaller lineups with maybe Nesmith at the four, and then you have your three guards with Miles Turner?
I think that's the best they can do without really compromising their spacing. And on that point, I have so much fun watching Aaron Nesmith these days. Like, he's probably the most reasonable facsimile of an actual wing that they have in the rotation right now. The 3-point shot is back for him. He's defending with juice. And these posters, where are they coming from? I just did not know he had these kind of hops in the bag. It's just been fun watching him kind of have a little resurgence. Was a piece in the Malcolm Brogdon trade. I don't think either side is regretting that one right now. So props to Nesmith. But yeah, I do think while they have the roster they have right now, it probably makes the most sense to kind of lean into it. Like, I don't think you go with a more traditional lineup and then you restrict some of the space that Tyrese Halliburton may have, or you limit some of the space that Miles Turner is rolling into just by, you know, just because you want to have a more natural lineup out there. Get your best players out. And ultimately, they're at their best when they play fast and when they play random with some of the early screen, some of the screens in early offense. Like, just lean into that until you have better. Again, I think long term, as they want to make the next step, they're going to have to balance it out a little bit. But until then, yeah, like, roll with three guards. Roll with four guards if you have to.
If only. So on the defense front, just philosophy-wise, you look at a team like the Kings, you look at a team like the Pacers, I don't think anyone would really put them in the, hey, they're really good defensively. But they play hard and they try. How much of that matters to you as far as evaluating a defense?
I think it matters quite a bit. I think it makes it an easier evaluation period, whether a team is good or bad. If I know that this team is operating at full tilt, if they're bringing maximum effort, it makes it easy for me to see, okay, if this is the best that they can do and it's working, I see what their path is if they hit it. And if this is the best that they can do and it's not working, they need to do something else. There needs to be some sort of long-term shift. And so with Indiana, like, I do think from an effort perspective, like, they are, they're punching above their weight. They're doing the best that they can. And I think aggression is the answer when you have a roster that is this fast and this small, generally. Because in addition to the double teams at the half court, you also see, like, Andrew Nimhart pick up a ball handler, have a full court or three quarters court, just to try to bleed some time off or try to get some early pressure there. And so, like, I'm glad that they're leading into, we want to play fast. We want to play hard all the time. And that's an easy way to catch, you know, a team on a West Coast swing or a team on a long road trip, or, oh, the Pacers, they're sixth or seventh in the standings. We're fine. We're good. And then you get hit in the mouth because they're playing 150 miles per hour. So I appreciate what they're doing.
No, I think what they've built is something that they believe in. Identity is so important. And you talk about Nimhart. I love his defense. Like, whoever you are, I'm going to try and guard you. Kawhi, come here. Let's have some fun. Let's see what happens. So it's nice to see the Pacers holding on, if that makes sense, with what they did early. They have an identity. Should we talk about some teams that make us think about what their identity is?
Yes, that is a tremendous segue. You are here for the new year. We like that. We like that. I'll kick things off very briefly. And by briefly, I mean 30 seconds or less, because it's either we've talked about this already or we just need, like, an actual pod to just dedicate diving into them. You lose that game against the Detroit Pistons with the players that they're missing. I don't know what to say about Minnesota right now. And then you get the cryptic quote from Nas Reed, like, nah, we know what the issue is. You know, we're going to keep it in-house, but we know what we need to do. And I'm just like, what does that mean exactly? I don't get what that means. Austin Rivers has also spoken quite a bit about, hey, we've said all that needs to be said. We've had the player meetings. We've had the players only meetings. We've had the film sessions. We just got to go out there and do it. This is ugly. As for the actual identity tilt, what's happening with Houston, man?
Wait, pause. Before you go to Houston, we're not getting off these Wolves that quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Hold on a minute, player.
My bad, Teddy Law.
I got some questions.
Okay.
Nikias, what is Minnesota good at?
Bickering, one-shot possessions.
What's the one thing they bring to the table every night?
Confusion.
What's their best defensive scheme?
Depends on who's on the floor. Like,
what is stopping a team from just switching against them all the time? What do they do? You can't be not so great defensively and not so great offensively. It's just a mix. It's a recipe for disaster. What am I watching? Help me. These are legit questions. I'm lost.
I'm trying to, as the Wolves optimist heading into the season, like, I am also perplexed. And I wish I had this super smart, detailed answer for you, but honestly, it's such a possession by possession ordeal with them on both ends of the floor. I struggled to figure out what the plan is. I don't know how much of it is, okay, the personnel is kind of limited versus the personnel is kind of limited because of injuries versus this is what the play caller, this is what the plan is, but the guards are going rogue. Look, versus this is what the game plan is, but we don't trust that guy, so we're not going to do that thing. And then that throws everything else out of tilt.
This Pistons-Wolves game was 92-92, and the Pistons willingly switched Marvin Bagley onto D'Angelo Russell. And the next thing you know it, the Pistons are up by 11. Help me.
And it got to go back because they were up double digits, like, what, 5 minutes left in the third of that game? And then it became a tie game. And then the Pistons continued to blow it up. Like, the bench for Detroit won that game.
Think about that.
I think three of the five players in that fourth quarter lineup for Detroit were came off the bench and played the entire fourth. It wasn't even we played strong and then the starters came in and took us home. Like, it was just, we are just going to ride this bench unit. It's inexplicable.
They got to find their identity. The players are not far off. The optics are bad, but this is not a tough fix. You just need to fix it. Either play your tails off defensively and figure out the offense, or move that ball and score offensively and figure out the defense. We are in January. You do not have time to figure out both. You got to pick one. Because right now, they are two games out of the play-in. Yeah, that being said, they're only five out of the four seed. So
that's also true. And, you know, to continue with the glimmer of hope, like, they were under 500 January 1st of 2022. And then they became the best offense or second best offense in basketball. I don't know. I don't think they're going to do that on offense this year based on what we've seen. But just in general, there is still time for them to turn things around. Like, they do get Cat back at some point, and I think he does help solve some of the offensive issues that you see. But it's just so much to sort out. And this is something that you touched on during one of our recent watch parties, where I think you asked something to the tune of, like, do you think they wish they were having this stretch with Cat in? Just so you could at least have an idea of, is this going to work? Because that's what's made this Wolves stretch, and I think this is six straight losses now. That's what's made it so weird. It was, okay, everyone's here. It looks mid. We lose Cat, hit a weak part of the schedule. We lose Rudy too. We win games. Rudy comes back, we lose. We lose Rudy again, we lose. Rudy comes back, we're still losing. And so it's just like, we can't even point to, Rudy's the problem, or, Cat's the problem. So, like, there's been something. D'Lo was terrible to start the year. Played well. And now it's, I don't know what's happening with him defensively. And if the jumper isn't falling, I don't know what he provides.
Everything that they have found, the teams have found a counter for. You know, and as they've gone up and down, they've been trying to figure out how to make those two work. They've had injuries. Totally get that. But now it's at a point where, okay, you kind of had D'Angelo Russell cooking in pick and roll. You had Anthony Edwards cooking in pick and roll. And team said, bet, switch.
Or Will Smith.
So now your premier center that you acquired, who's very good at rolling, gets no rolls. And you, who are you running off of screens? Like, you now need Kyle Anderson in the lineup. But who's your movement shooter? Who's your movement option set wise? What can you run? So now you're just running pick and roll 19 times a game while Rudy's either standing at the block or running to the block, and teams are switching and scram switching and doing whatever they need to. They just need to find something that they believe in offensively. And then defensively, they've got to believe and get stops that way. Like, it's a quick fix. If they can do one thing. But it's not this. It can't be this. This is not going to do it.
It's not going to work.
It's not. Anthony Edwards, what? He scored, what, 28 in all four of these games? 27 in all four of these games, last four? They lost all of them?
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to get down and play defense and hopefully let that lead. You know, we talked about a lot of these teams with the early success building the buy-in. This is what happens when you lose early. the buy-in isn't as strong. And if you don't have that buy-in, you're tapping on the ceiling at a certain point. It's like, man, this ain't working. Why are we doing this?
What else supposed to do with it?
That's when you start hearing on the church. Why are we switching? Why is this person getting subbed? It happens quick. So for me, if I'm Minnesota, they need a win. They need some belief. They got three big games versus Denver, versus Portland, versus LA. They need two of them.
Ooh, tall task. So on a related note, I ask you a very quick free throw question.
What's up?
As part of Austin Rivers being asked about like the general vibe in Minnesota and stuff, mm-hmm. Yeah, as part of his answer, he said, everybody's friends here. Are you hitting him with the LeBron meme or do you believe him?
Depends on your definition of friends.
That answers the question. All right.
But
I think that is, yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah.
I think everybody's acquaintances. I think y'all cool at work.
I have a singular skepticism. Just gonna
look, man. I already did the rant and the dab joke. I can't do it again.
Yeah, that's what was it? Six times all. Oh, that's kind of rough.
All right, back to the Rockets. I'm sorry, blast off.
No, you're fine. And this is probably recency bias because I was in a Rockets watch party earlier today, and they were talking through some of the recent issues, and they were talking about the Eric Gordon comments in which he was asked, "Are you seeing improvement?" from, you know, from the roster, from the young guys. And he simply said, there is no improvement. I was like, oh, that is succinct. That is transparent. It's kind of cold. I don't know how wrong he is. And this is coming from your longest tenured vet. And I just kind of feel... for Houston in a bit. I feel for Houston in a bit. Then I'm also just like, you kind of should have seen this coming with the way that the roster was constructed. Like we've talked about even during last season of the pod, like we talked about what Houston was running offensively. And during the rookie report, when we were talking about Jabari Smith for the first time, we were talking about, hey, why is this guy only run off of, I think the stat was like 5 flare screens at that point, for like the first 9 to 10 games of the season for him. Like, why do you have this guy that can shoot off movement? You just don't do that. And it's just a weird hodgepodge of talent that you can't really use together / defenses just have answers for. Defenses are so comfortable sagging off of just about everyone Houston puts in the lineup outside of like two guys. And that's such a problem for when Houston actually wants to insert some movement into their offense. And that's before getting into, will this be run correctly? Because if you want to put on a blooper reel of Houston trying to run set plays and running into each other or just standing there and being like, hey, what's happening? You can do that. I struggle with this because I feel like Kevin Porter Jr. is a little bit better than he was last year. I think Jalen Green is better than he was last year. I think Alperen Şengün is better than he was last year. I think KJ Martin is better than he was last year. And functionally, it just hasn't mattered because it hasn't really changed how defenses guard them. And because of who they're playing with, it also doesn't feel like their growth means anything. Who's drawing two for Houston?
They have the talent in Jalen Green to get two on the ball. Kevin Porter Jr., if he's got it going. The issue is like a hodgepodge of things. A lot of them you mentioned. But when you have a team that doesn't necessarily run their sets well, it makes it tough for you to go through any options. So you now default to pick and roll. And every team in the league is pretty much saying, hey, you're getting one of two coverages. And they haven't advanced in that area to now know, how do I get this pass off against this coverage? So it's, hey, let me dribble down to the side. Let me come off pick and roll. If it's there, I'm doing it. If it's not, I'm exploring. If I explore too much, I'm either shooting or I'm a pass late. Or
yeah.
dot, dot, dot. And when you have that kind of inconsistency mixed in with the confidence, these have a lot of confident players, that's also going to lead to, oh, I got it. I'm bringing it up and pulling up. So there's just not really a flow systematically, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how many times do you see them really get to drive and kick?
Against good defenses, not very often.
So, I mean, it's A, finding a way to create an advantage. B, what do we do once we find it? They still have to learn that part.
Yeah.
What are we running to get that open? And it's just like an odd cohesion. I hate to go with the vibes route, but I think there was a driving kick early in the Knicks game. Kevin Porter Jr. drives, like four blue jerseys descend on him. He turns and spins and somehow finds Jabari for three. And it was just, that was it. I just ran back on defense. I'm like, all right. Then you mix in defensively, they haven't necessarily hit that consistency they want on that end. And so I get what Eric Gordon was trying to say. This is kind of the same meal. You open the freezer, we got 20 of these. We've been eating these for like the last 2 months.
No more corn dogs.
Dog, can we go to the grocery store, please? I think he sounds like someone who would just like to lose in a different way. You know, it's one of those things where I think that's the disappointing part, is you'd want to see the growth in that area. And for me, it's just like, okay, are they going to hit that next stride? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to still be late clock? Let's hope maybe something happens. Or ISO, let's hope something happens.
Yeah, and to that point, like he specifically referenced, like moving the ball and playing for each other. The telltale and veteran speak, to say the least. But
actually, not even to cut you off. I got some tape rolling right there. They're playing the Knicks, right? They're playing the Knicks. Finally, look like we might have a hint of ball movement, the guys. Just a smidge, right? Just a little hint. It's a pick and roll. They swing it to KJ Martin. He swings it to Jalen Green. Comes off another screen. Draws defense. Throws it over Kevin Porter Jr.'s head. Oh. They're trying, man.
They're trying. Like, it's just... The young guys are trying to get it. And then in this aspect, I do feel for Steven Silas, because I do feel like, and this is something that I mentioned last year, like I feel like the offense from a scheme perspective, it's a little bare bones because he's trying to simplify these reads for the younger guards. But that just doesn't bode well for everyone else. Like Jabari is just more than a spot up guy. He just is. Like even if his primary role is shooter, he should be coming off flares. He should be coming off of staggers more often than he is. He should be dropping from wing to corner with a pin in or with a flare for him. Like, there's just more for him there. But you look at what Jalen Green and what Kevin Porter Jr. do as initiators. I think both of them are pretty comfortable making lob passes or making drop down passes. You ask either one of them to make corner skips consistently, they're just not comfortable doing that yet. At the very least, they're not comfortable doing that with a live dribble. So even that kind of factors into, or I would imagine that it factors into, okay, I would like to have this happening on the weak side. I may just need to have these guys standing in one spot so they can actively see the read and try to generate some growth there, if that makes sense.
You know, it may be time to force some movement. It's like the simplification point is a good one, but I look at OKC. And yes, they do have a Shea, but they know how to play outside of the play.
They do.
Those guys are driving. If I ain't got it, I'm moving it. I'm cutting. I'm spacing. I'm driving. Trying to force more help. I'm kicking. They are getting to drive and kick. It doesn't matter what else they do. They might botch a bunch of the rest of it. But we're going to drive and kick. We're just going to drive and tap the paint. That's where the singular purpose doesn't help. And that's where kind of like the mixture of everything that's kind of going a little sour hurts them. Because if you're a team that has that mindset to move the ball and play for each other, you could trip into some good offense. If you're a team that knows how to execute at least the bare bones of your set and you can play out of it, you could trip into some good offense. But you kind of have this mismatch of sometimes it's going to be this, sometimes it's going to be that. It's just hard to be consistent. And that's what you need offensively. Even if you're a bad offensive team, go turn on a college game. I'm sure someone's just running flex all game still. But you know what they're doing? They're running flex all game.
They're running it hard too. Nailing up screens. Like, all right, we might miss, but it ain't gonna be because we did the wrong thing. And like, to your OKC point, and this is where I'm just like, hey, this is why you watch OKC and you don't say, hey, their record's bad, who cares? You can see the process on both ends of the floor. And like, ultimately for a rebuilding team, that's what you want. The losses may pile up, but I actively see what we are trying to accomplish. The players know what they're supposed to be doing. It. The result may not be there because this team is better than us or those players are better than these players, but you see what the vision is. If you watch five OKC games, you know what their plan is on both ends. It may not work if they're playing the Celtics or insert elite team here, but you know what they're trying to do. With the Rockets, I mean, I guess you know what they're trying to do is just kind of the inverse. It's like, oh, this is all y'all are doing right now.
If they can up the togetherness, and they have those nights where that ball is moving, ball is popping, but they need it. Like they can't. It's going to be hard for them to win in this league that way. And I think, unfortunately, for young teams, sometimes you get trapped in not understanding why these things are racking up. You know what I mean? That's why, you know, you end up with 20 assists, 18 assists, 19 assists, 38 meal field goals, 21 assists, that type of stuff.
Yeah. They have so many good / fun young players, and I just want them to gel and I want them to grow. It's just not meshing.
They got to buy in. They got to believe. It's the most underrated concept in the league. It does not matter what your schemes are, your X's and O's. If the buy-in is not coming from the people in the jerseys, and this isn't necessarily a shot at Houston or anything like that, it's a wider point. If you don't have that from there, it's going to be an uphill climb at some point. Look at Brooklyn.
Yep. When they didn't have it, you saw it, and they've had it, and you see they're second in the East right now. In addition to getting healthier / more available, the general point still lands. But just want to see a little bit more cohesion from Houston. I think I'm good. Who did you have on your list, good sir?
New year, new me, same pump fake.
Oh, no.
It's my toxic trait.
Oh, no.
Welcome back to the play-in, Washington Wizards.
Headlined by Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah. I got the text on New Year's Eve. I'm back.
I can't do this. Man, got the where you at text. Oh, no.
Jokes aside, I really wanted to ask this question to you. So is it just Daniel Gafford? Is he just the answer? So I fell down a small rabbit hole.
Okay.
I was looking at the Washington Wizards starting lineups. So Monte Morris, Corey Kispert, Kyle Kuzma, Kristaps Porzingis, and Daniel Gafford, 3-0. Morris, Beal, Kuzma, Porzingis, Gafford, 2-0. Morris, Beal, Denny, Kuzma, Gafford, 1-0. And Morris, Beal, Kispert, Kuzma, Gafford, 0-1. So it's 6-1 as a starter, 5-0 when he starts next to Porzingis. It just intrigued me. It seems like the 10 seed is just going to be a rotating wheel. Like, I don't know if the Wizards have enough. Rui Hachimura has been playing pretty well. It appears they've found something with the two bigs to feel better about it. Mm-hmm. Porzingis is still playing well. Kuzma's doing a lot. Yeah.
You're back on, huh?
No, I'm not. But okay. Yeah, every now and then, it's good to be sentimental. Wizards, Bulls, Raptors. Who do you trust?
Yuck. Wizards, Bulls, Raptors?
Hawks.
Yuck. You know what's extra nasty about this?
What?
Is that I had a mailbag question that featured the Hawks and the Bulls. So, I'm glad we're all on the same page here.
I mean, those are the 9, 10, 11, and 12 right now.
It's nasty. There's talent, but also
it appears the Magic have faded a little bit.
Catching fades. Sorry, I was hacked. I guess my answer would probably be I want to say Toronto, but like I just don't know what's happening right now. Their most recent win notwithstanding.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really. The answer is probably Chicago. Oddly enough,
you know, you don't feel good about saying that.
I don't like that. I don't feel confident about that.
That don't even sound like you.
Yeah.
That man said DeMar and be like, I guess.
It's less DeMar. It's more, you know what? Like, Zach LaVine's playing better as of late. So, like, I just don't know what to expect. I guess the right answer is probably Chicago. I don't feel great. I would like for it to be Atlanta, but they can't stop firing and wanting to quit each other. So I don't know. God bless Toronto. I have just seen enough of Washington. Like the answer is no. It's just not.
You don't trust any of these teams.
I don't trust anybody.
I thought Nick Nurse just said, "Hey man, we need to play hard," and I'm like, wait.
Ain't that your whole thing? The entire boat is built out of being a try. Your identity is being try hard. If you have to tell your team, hey, we need more effort. Put some more effort into the clipboard. What are we doing right now? I'm so confused.
So in summary, you don't trust 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12 in the East. I know you don't trust Miami. I don't know why, but you don't trust Miami. I know you don't trust the Knicks.
You said it like that.
I've been doing this pod for almost 2 years with you. I know.
Is it the Knicks or is it Tibbs?
Yes.
Okay. Well, all right.
So this East playing preview that we do is going to be hilarious.
It's going to be nasty work. Is this going to be a compilation of things that I've said throughout the season? Depending on who's playing well. Well, you know, back in November when they had this 4-game win streak, I did say this.
It's amazing. We go through the notes. What did I say about this?
Shoot, what I say during this losing streak? That's the fun part. I have hit on every bit of this at some point.
It's a good point.
God. That's nasty work.
That was all I had for the Wizards. And then the Jazz. And I feel bad for the Jazz. This league can be kind of cruel in the guys. Mm-hmm. So they're 19-16. Going into Christmas, right? Post-Christmas. Lose at San Antonio 122-126. Lose at Golden State 107-112. Lose at Sacramento 125-126. Lose against Miami 123-126.
Tyler Hero.
That's four straight losses. 19-20. I think that they're under 500 for the first time this season. And it was all because they lost four games by 13 points in a week.
That's so tough.
And this is the tough part, because now during the stretch, it's opening up questions that you probably didn't think you'd be asking about Utah at this point in the year. Mm. They played their way into that conversation. So it's not necessarily like, oh, Utah's frauds. It's not that. My bad. Click the button. All right. But it's more so, can they keep their movement up? Can they keep pressure on teams? Can they handle the activity that teams are showing them? Can they get stops on the other end when they need to? Are they stuck in this kind of middle ground? Like, do you have the two-way lineups you thought you did? Do you have a pick-and-roll coverage for Kelly Olynyk? Is it becoming a part where we need this person for this moment? But that makes it tough to have a total team, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like teams, like I loved Jared Vanderbilt as a screener. I love what they were doing with Kelly Olynyk and Lauri Markkanen. They're still playing well offensively. The issue is you can see some teams are like, cool, I'm not going to let him roll Vanderbilt. So we're going to switch or drop and live with whatever y'all do coming off. I looked up and they're playing Kessler, Olynyk, and Lowry all together at the same time. I'm like, all right, I get it. But also, you know,
it's a lot of size.
And then I was like, a couple of these games down the stretch, I was like, this is a lot of dribbling. Like, I think Colin Sexton is out now, but I was like, there's a lot of dribbling. There's a lot of Jordan Clarkson. Feels different. So that's where I'm just like, hey, if we can they handle this bump of adversity is where I'm thinking about. Or have they kind of hit the ceiling and now there's a book out on them? Because that's the other part. Once we turn the page, once you turn to this portion of the year, once half the season's done, the scouting report has flipped. As you like to say, there's film.
Of what you did.
Of what you did. And so can you make the counter adjustments? And that's where I look at teams like Portland, Utah, Sacramento. Like, it's hard to surprise the league twice. So how does this second half of the season go for them? Do you have any thoughts on Utah? Are you just like, hey, they did what they're supposed to do? They're competing. Where are you at with them?
Like, they're still much better. Like, even during the four-game win streak, you noted how close those losses were collectively. So, like, they're still playing well. For me, one, I just didn't think Utah would be this good, period. And so, like, I'd have to kind of counterbalance that in my head, too. But, like, even with the framework of that, like, I always felt like the offense would be a little bit better than the defense. And I just kind of went into the year like, all right, they're going to be, like, 19th in offense and 27th, 28th in defense or something like that. And they're just going to be bad. They're third in offense. And they're 27th in defense. So it's like the extreme end of what I thought was going to be. And for me, it's just like, okay, as they get healthier and as they got healthier, they're training to play a little bit smaller, at least on the perimeter. I just wonder, can they get the defense to 20th again? Because they weren't always this. Like, very early in the season, like, they were flirting with top 10 in both. I didn't think that was sustainable. But, like, I thought there was a pathway to, okay, if they're good offense, average defense, this may very well be a plucky 44-45 win team. And Will Hardy's getting coach of the year votes, et cetera, et cetera. If we're going to be third in offense, 27th in defense, that's how you're going to end up in a bunch of these close games. Well, you've scored enough to win, but you've also given up enough to where, crap, we're in another clutch game now. And I don't know how you balance that. And just with the personnel that they have on the roster, they can't really go defense heavy without completely tanking their offense. And the offense is what's bringing them to the dance to begin with. And so it's kind of similar to the Indiana question where you were like, hey, do you think it's smart for them to just kind of lean into like the multiple guard lineups in particular, and kind of lean into what makes them good? For Utah, I think the pathway to them being a play-in / playoff team is going to be just leaning heavy into the offense and hoping the defense raises up enough to where you can kind of make that work. I don't know if you get a second wave more so than you get, okay, we made more shots or we were 3% better defensively and that helped us eke out a few more wins. I don't know if we get a full shift in the second half of the year. That doesn't mean they can't make the play-in or the playoffs. But I think, like, structurally, I think this is kind of who they are. I think the book is kind of out. And, you know, again, because they have the talent that they do, they're going to be able to put up points. I don't anticipate, without injury, I don't anticipate Utah's offense tailing off significantly at all. They just have too many. They have a lot of shooting. Will Hardy's a creative coach. They use their bigs in a multitude of ways. They have so many dribble drive threats that can create and maintain advantages, kind of bouncing off the Houston point where they don't really have the advantage maintainers. Utah has that in abundance. So I don't really have any concerns about the offense. It's just the defense can't be that. And the fact that they're 27th now speaks to how dramatic the slide has been since like mid-November. Like, I'm fine. It's just kind of like, all right, well, we're here now. And so I'm more intrigued by, like, what Utah thinks about it. Because as we hit January, like, are they going to be like, okay, the defense is what's holding us back from being a surefire playoff team. Let's be buyers. Or do you just kind of ride this out? And if you slip, and it's like, all right, fine, we'll take a lottery pick plus wherever Minnesota lands, because Lord knows, I don't know what they got going on right now.
I think Utah, you kind of use this as a data collecting year in a sense. You know, this isn't it.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the vision. So that changes the math a little bit. You want to compete. So if this works, two thumbs up. But we know what we're missing. If it doesn't, okay, we know what could work with some of these guys. We know what we need to go get. But it's I don't think, I think they have the luxury of not being in a overachieve, so this is it type of mode where you have this kind of success. And it's like, oh no, we need to tap in now. And it's like, not so much. Like, this is great, but we want to go over here. But that's where we're headed. So I think that's kind of the luxury of being able to find the pieces that could stay, find the pieces that might not, and move forward there.
I got you. I'm still, and again, like zooming out, I still remain impressed with what Utah's been able to do. I just thought they were going to be 13th, 14th, 15th in the West.
Yeah, I know. I did the pod with you.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
only.
Yeah, if only, you know, you
just be talking to my name. It's fine. Just change my name to If Only on here.
Change your name to If Only. You got it. Oh, while we're here, do you have any players that have caught your eye as of late?
Luka.
It's a good one.
So there've been 11 50 plus point games this season, Nekias. Luka has three of them.
Pretty good.
Luka has three of them since December 23rd.
Ah. That's also quick shout out to Greg Popovich, who tongue in cheek said, yeah, we've got a whole Luka under 50. And he scored 51 in a 1-point win. It's like, ah, well.
Yeah, he's playing pretty good.
Kind of tough, yeah.
Scored 30 or more in 12 out of 15 games in December. I think he's the first player since James Harden in January 2019 to drop 50-plus three times in a five-game span. So he's doing pretty good. Shout-out to Emmanuel Quickley. Had a little career high assist, 15 at Dallas. A little 36-7-7 against the Spurs, 27-7 in Houston. It's nice to see a little reminder that, hey, that scoring and the playmaking growth kind of there. Sometimes a player will burst on the scene and then he'll get better, but it won't be the same as the first year. And people just kind of forget. It's like, you know, he kind of dressed a lot. Yeah.
Like, either forget or you find yourself in trade rumors for future draft equity, I suppose. Yeah. Oh,
you're not going to let that one go, are you?
Yeah. He's young and good. Keep him. I don't get. But anyway, continue. I'm sorry. Shout out to Emmanuel Quickley. He's doing the thing.
Joe Ingles.
Hey, there it is.
16 assists in his last two games. So hat tip to you and the playmaking that you said he could bring to the table for Milwaukee. And then I did want to give a salute to Zach LaVine.
Bouncing back.
47% from three over his last five games. I think he's hit 16 during that stretch. So salute to him. Who you got, guys?
Good stuff. Well, we will start with LeBron James.
I can't believe this is my life.
It's a good shot. Just a very casual 34-7-7 over his last six games, including a near 40-point triple-double against the Atlanta Hawks mere hours after the Nate McMillan might resign article came out. So that was a fun little backdrop to that game. But 47-10-9 on your birthday is good stuff. LeBron very quietly, if you can even call that quietly, 28-7-6 this year. 59% on twos this year, which is right below his 2012-13 season in Miami. If you want to give any kind of, just give you a clue on how absurd it is this late into his career. LeBron James still very good at basketball. I mentioned him a little bit earlier in the last episode. I want to dig in a little bit more with Christian Wood. Dallas is 6-2, and they've won their last six with Christian Wood as the full-time starter. Christian Wood averaging shade under 20 points, eight boards, 2.5 blocks during the stretch, shooting 40% from three on nearly seven attempts on direct pick and rolls between him and Luka Doncic, which is Luka shooting, Luka passing to Christian Wood shooting, or him just making a pass and that guy shooting. 1.4 points per possession, which is well in the way the best mark in the NBA. And on any possession featuring a Luka Christian Wood pick and roll, is 1.27 points per possession during this stretch, which is also just a high watermark in the league. He's been insane. Christian Wood continue to compete on defense. We'll continue to monitor that, but Luka and Christian Wood on the floor together, they're just blitzing teams. And as long as the defense isn't dumpster fire, like there isn't a real reason to turn back from Christian Wood as a starter at this point. So I just wanted to give him a hat tip. Aaron Gordon, averaging 19 points, pretty much 19 and 7, shade over a steal across the month of December, shot 61% from the field, 37% from three. Three-point volume is down for him. That's just the benefit of playing off of Luka Doncic. You could just cut. Could also just catch and drive on the move, get some seals of team, stash small defenders on you. Aaron Gordon's been able to do all that. This is easily the most efficient season of his career, shooting over 60% from the field, nearly 67% on twos. You combine that with the defense. Like, all-star case is probably a little too rich for me without injuries happening, but like, he's been very good and he deserves praise. He's been Denver's second best player this year. He deserves your love. Luke Kennard continued to bomb away from three, 47% from three after leading the NBA in three-point percentage among qualified players last season. The Clippers with a plus 9.9 net rating in the near 600 minutes that he's played this year, well, with him on the floor. And with Kawhi, Paul George, and Luke Kennard on the floor together, they've only been on the floor together for 39 minutes this season. They have outscored opponents by 48 points in that time frame. A plus 48 in 39 minutes is absurd. And as we hit the second stretch of the year, I believe the Clippers have, I want to say, two or three sets of back-to-backs left in the entire season. So I think we're just going to get full-fledged Kawhi at this point, barring another injury. We're probably going to see more of that trio playing together. I'm intrigued to see just how often they close with him. We saw a little bit in the Pacers game. Teams obviously will go after Luke Kennard, but it'll be a switch and then a double. The Clippers have the length. They have defensive personnel to pull that off. So if they are able to kind of hide Luke in that way defensively, the offensive value is immense with his shooting and the secondary playmaking. Just want to give him props there. And on the OKC front, just want to shout out Isaiah Joe for finding a spot. And not just finding a spot, but actually finding a spot in a rotation. A lot of fourth quarter minutes for him. Shooting 46% from three. Well, shot 46% from three on nearly five attempts in December. Shooting over 40% from three this season. It's been a nice resurgence story for Isaiah Joe, who did not stick in Philly for reasons. But turns out he can shoot. Turns out he can make some plays on the move. So that is my hat tip for Isaiah Joe. And now we transition into some free throws. Do you have free throws, good sir?
I do. Do you?
I do indeed have free throws.
What you got?
All right. Well, as I alluded to a little bit earlier, a higher faith level. And the Hawks or the Bulls?
Right this second, give me the Bulls.
Okay. More casual while torching your defense, Nikola Jokic or Kawhi Leonard?
That's very tough. They are very casual in different ways. I think I'm going to overall go Kawhi with the casual nature, just because he really will just catch it and just do some stuff and then jog back. Like, Jokic is like just the catch and shoot three where he just stands there, looks at you and just says, why not?
Yeah.
And then he cashes it. That's tough. He has the HB dive element. Kawhi ain't been running through the tackles as much. So I'm going to go with Kawhi.
Okay, fair enough. Better coach of the year case, Jock Vaughn or Willie Green?
Ooh, that is a tough one. Well, I'd say right now it's going to be Vaughn. Willie Green's is pretty good, but I think he's the West is not cooperating with him.
Okay.
If he turns around and the Nets end up one, yeah.
Okay.
I can see it.
Sorry, Willie. That's fine. Yeah. New Orleans is only a game out of the one seed in the West right now. It's going to keep tabs.
Do you want to just disagree? I'm reversing your free throw to you. No, Nikhiletic man. What do you think? Willie Green?
I'm just looking at the records. The Pelicans, they're 23-13. The Nets are 24-12, you know, heading into the, well, I guess, can't say heading into the Monday slate since we had a game at 3 Eastern today. 6 o'clock right now, but yeah, okay, fine. I don't know. I thought it was a good question, so I felt like I would ask my co-host. You didn't have this on your list. I think both coaches are having very good seasons.
Oh, God. I'm going to interrupt your free throws real quick. How do you get packed up over a 3 p.m. start, dog?
I'm just like, how is that even something to... It was that, and then I tweeted out the Darius Garland stat. The Cleveland was 7-0 in the games that Garland hasn't played, and like the first five quote tweets were like, "Well, there you go." Like, I'm just like, "Well, how did y'all turn this in?" No, it was a Buddy Hill tweet that went into, "Well, there you go, Lakers," and then the Darius Garland tweet immediately turned into, "Well, they got to trade him." I'm just like, "Who said that?"
You did.
I was doing research. Like, huh, this is interesting. I said nothing else beyond that. How did that turn into?
Gotta live with it, bro.
That's. It's like, what are we doing right now? Anyway, to the mailbag. Not the mailbag, Jesus. To the free throws. Aside from Buddy Hield, who is the best active shooter in the league that nobody really talks about?
Who's the best? Kevin Huerter?
Okay.
I guess would be my first guess there.
Okay.
Klay Thompson?
You don't think people talk about Klay Thompson?
Not enough.
I see.
Probably Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Huh. All right. So let's see who your under the radar guys were.
I'm not saying Yuta. Sorry.
Ah, I see. You nah, that's tough. No, all right, I have a
Watanabe.
Oh, okay, you got it. I have a series of better defender questions. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Better defender, Javon Carter or De'Anthony Melton?
Javon Carter.
Emmanuel Quickley or Andrew Nembhard?
Andrew Nembhard.
Jaden McDaniels or Jason Tatum?
Jason Tatum.
Ben Simmons or Jaylen Brown?
Which Ben Simmons?
Ah, whichever one you the one right now.
Hmm. Jaylen right now.
Okay. Julius Randle when he tries or Kyrie Irving when he tries?
Yuck. Oh, this is a trap. Oh, this is nasty. This is disgusting work that you just done.
Yes, sir.
Oh. Julius Randle.
All right. Derek White or Alex Caruso?
Yuck. Give me Caruso.
Bam Adebayo or Jaren Jackson Jr.?
It's still going to be Bam for me.
Okay. Last question I had. More annoying, a UNLV loss, an Arizona State loss, an Oregon loss, or me asking you about either one?
Give me the foursome again. See, no, it's tricky. I can put Oregon loss number 4 because you didn't specify which sport.
Oregon football.
Okay, that changes the math a little bit. Changes the math a little bit. Who is Arizona State playing?
Arizona.
That also changes the math. Who is UNLV playing?
It's the school, San Diego State.
What's the school, he says. Yeah, you know, disrespect the whole conference by that. Don't worry about it. You asking me is going to be last.
Okay.
The rest of them are going to trigger me into oblivion. Oregon football loss will probably be 3rd. Okay. It's going to be extremely annoying, but watched that my whole life. So kind of used to it, can bake it in a little bit. Yeah. Arizona State losing to Arizona. No, absolutely not. It's number 2. Okay. And UNLV losing to San Diego State is number 1 because San Diego State triggers me. If there were not specific opponents, I'd probably go UNLV 2 because I always believe. But yeah, okay. Yeah. Pain. That's what you just did to me, sir.
Ah, tough.
Well deserved. I probably did the whole 15-minute intro.
I said, you kicked off the pod. I'm like, yeah, you know, what Chris Paul data collecting, you know? It's like, yeah, he doesn't know what to have in these free throws. That's cool.
Man, another thing. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I did a watch party. This man flipped to Arizona State losing to Arizona with glee and was shocked with my response.
Not even glee. I was literally trying to find live sports.
Commercials. Commercials are great.
We promised them every sport. I don't know what
to say. We promised you nothing.
Join the Dunker Spot watch parties, folks, for more antics. Your turn, though.
What was funnier? That pop joke that they needed to keep Luka to 50 or that Luka scored exactly 51?
I was definitely Luka dropping 51.
Okay.
That felt like a ask the scorekeeper game. What I got, 44? All right,
What is the more shameless New Year's Eve tweet that you sent? wow, I haven't talked to y'all since last year, or imagine still being in 2022 with 18 crying laughing emojis.
I feel like Shameless would probably be the haven't talked to y'all since last year.
Do you feel proud about either of those?
Yes. Both good tweets.
But there are other time zones. So never mind. Top three Super Bowl moments of 2022. Go.
Can I use this to rant?
Yeah, you can rant post the top three moments that post Super gave us in 2022, the legend.
Oh, boy. Well, you see, the top one is very clearly when she had the jump ball with Diana Taurasi. And okay. They had
that's one.
Antics at, yeah.
I need two more.
My God. The Sue Bird corner three near the end of game three that should have been the game winner, but wasn't.
Okay. Pain. That's two. Well, what else you got?
Pain. That's hilarious. Oh, geez.
Do we have a third?
We got. I just enjoyed the pet. You know what? Ah, shoot. Who did she pass it to, though? I'm thinking of the first Storm Aces game when Tina Charles was there. She got to start. Sue had a that's gonna bug me. That's gonna bug me.
All right, mission accomplished. Would you like to go on your rant?
Dog.
Well, here, I'll set you up. What was the top WNBA moment to you this year, 2022?
Storm Aces game three. That's the one. Like, that's the one. I don't understand how you have a top 10 list of WNBA moments. And like the Sylvia Fowles dunk was four, I believe. And Asia wins her first title, caps off title, MVP, DPOY, whatever, whatever. Her moment was her and Ja Morant dapping up. And I'm just like, that's cool. However, comma, like I get the South Carolina connection as someone that was born and raised in South Carolina. However, comma, waves arms wildly. What are we doing? There was so much good basketball played in the W this year. We covered the entire season. We talked about a lot of it. You could have got 10 moments from this postseason. And the top moment was a conversation between. Sure, man. I'm sorry.
Guys, number three was a boombox. Number seven was a championship ring. You should have just known what the energy was.
I feel like that's the problem, man. Like, what? That's no.
Just go check out Mark Schindler's list on WBA.com.
God. Yes, you should check out Mark's list. The article was very good. Always support Mark Schindler.
There you go.
With basketball writing specifically.
Okay.
Not the you know, the food takes as a whole nother thing, but yeah. Good thing. Mark's my guy. I love him. Good.
Who's the most underrated big in the league?
Oh, this is very bit adjacent. Most underrated big in the league, probably Jakob Poeltl.
Okay. Stronger MVP case, Giannis or Kevin Durant?
Probably KD right now.
Okay. LeBron playing Madden to end the year. Relatable or no?
No, can't say it.
Okay. Is there a more toxic love-hate fan scenario than Julius Randle and the Knicks in the Garden? This man got MVP chance today.
Just the definition of it, when it's good, it's good. We'll leave that alone. I've got nothing on that one. I'm just going to let that one rock.
Stronger all-star case, Julius Randle or Kyrie Irving?
Oh, that's nasty. Probably Randle.
Okay. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Oh boy, this is also a bit adjacent. I am right-handed.
Right-handed, okay. Do you put your left hand up?
Sometimes when I'm struggling to remember my identity, you know.
Yeah. Haters can't stand us. What is Major Tutty? And why does it exist?
Oh, well. Dan Snyder's a criminal. I don't know what to tell you. Like, he's just a bad dude. Hey.
Well, that's all I had.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Major, oh boy. Also, shout out Ron Rivera for just not knowing that the Commanders game had playoff implications. That's cool. Probably a thing you should know.
Wow.
It's.
All right, do the thing. Take us home.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to all the dunkers out there. How about that? Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having some fun in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. If you have a League Pass subscription, multiple cable subscriptions, they have a Rolodex of those. If you can sign in, set up your profiles. Very easy to do. Probably takes a minute or so to get set up. And you can watch live games with us or whatever else we put on the screen. We were going through Magic Johnson and Clyde Drexler highlights on on Sunday. We watched SmackDown on Friday. We watched the John Cena match in which a commercial happened like 45 seconds into the match, which is very odd, but that's neither here nor there. But obviously we watch a lot of basketball. So if you want to get some analysis, some antics, bad food takes in the chat, etc., come rock with us. We're having a lot of fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
We'll see Nikias. The thing is, you can't see him.